For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Again by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scores. Corey Perry.
Well, he had able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani around in front. Score! Teemu Selanne with the steal.
Three in the face. One. Score! Off the floor. On the floor. Paul Kariya.
Welcome, everybody, to the Forever Mighty podcast. It's going to be a little bit of a different show today, as you'll notice in a minute. There's not going to be a ton of hockey to talk about. Instead, we will be looking across the pond to English football. I don't know why I'm talking like this. It's fine. With us today, obviously, it's me, it's Eddie, and then joining us is Brent Maximin. He's a football writer, former editor for SB Nation's The Busby Babe, and one of my favorite people on Twitter lately. So I will say that. How you doing, Brent?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No problem.
Excited to talk hockey.
At some point, yeah. Oh, my goodness. So I guess the first question, one of the things we wanted to ask you was just kind of like, how you got into United fan and rooting about United, rooting for United, writing about United, things like that?
As far as being a football fan, I think I have a similar story. Or as far as being a United fan, I should say, I probably have a similar story for a lot of people of my generation, which is that when I was at that very impressionable age, when you pick a favorite team, the Premier League was the most widely broadcast league in the world of the European leagues, and United were the best team there was. And then I fell in love with Eric Cantona.
Not hard to do.
No.
Yeah. Still am in love with Eric Cantona. As writing football, writing about United, I think I started out, again, like a lot of people, in message boards, you know, back in the dark days of the internet. And, you know, my full-time career was very different. And I was actually in grad school for psychology the first time, the first time I wrote an article about football. And it was a friend of mine who is now an editor and producer, who I made on one of those very nerdy message boards, who asked me to write. I started writing for a few different outlets and then got into editing as well. And yeah, I've just been doing it in my free time ever since.
That's awesome. So it's funny too, because like the way I became a United fan, I almost feel like is the only way to have become a United fan if you missed the like peak Sir Alex Ferguson days. Mm. I remember getting home, like I left college and got home, and my friends were huge soccer fans, and I was like, all right, well, let me get into this. And then I was like trying to pick a team, and you know, Stoke City's a fun name, Aston Villa, you know, all that, just like all that kind of stuff. And then I ended up just picking United because my buddy was a United fan, and I was like, if I pick a team that someone's already a fan of, I can learn things easier. And then it turned out, I found out after the fact, is that I picked the Yankees. And I didn't know what to do with that information. But, you know, like the first season I really started watching was David Moyes' first season.
That's, so like, that's a tough year to come in.
Yeah, man, it's honestly, it's been like being a Laker fan for the Smush Parker era. Like, it's just been a disaster. But it's also been kind of fun because you've gotten to watch the club kind of get back to that level. And for me, it's turned back into a competitive team that for, you know, 6 or 7 of the last 10 years, they just haven't been.
That is, oof. I mean, I now know more United fans who, you know, got into United or got into the sport more recently. You know, football has been part of my life since I was, you know, very young, since I was a little kid, basically. But now I know more recent United fans, and sometimes it's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that there are fans who only know United being disappointing. because, yeah, there was for my whole teenage years, because I said one of the things that I was had noted on Twitter today is that I think Arsenal United is the best Premier League era rivalry. Even though Liverpool and City are United's two biggest rivals, and then there's Leeds, you know, in terms of historic rivalries. In terms of title rivals, there was nothing like Arsenal United in the 90s, early 2000s, because one of those two clubs won the title every season, and the players just genuinely didn't like each other. So to go from, okay, we're either going to win the Premier League or Arsenal will beat us and we'll come second, to whatever that David Moyes season was, the death by a thousand cuts of Louis van Gaal, to the absolute misery of Jose Mourinho. I mean, for that to be...
That's my guy.
Like, that is... I love Mourinho. 75% of your fandom, that is rough, you know. I feel like we have... You've only gotten it. I don't know what the equivalent is in American sports. It would be like if you're trying to pick an NBA team and you pick the Cavs this summer when LeBron left to Miami.
Yeah, exactly. Except
LeBron would have been playing for the Cavs for 25 years before that. Like that's how long the good times have been going on, and you just got on at exactly the wrong time. Yeah. And then, of course, LeBron never came back. Like, that's, you know.
It's hard to think about. Like, Steven, I didn't know before this when you became a United fan, but, you know, for any of us, like you, Brent, as well, when you're watching back, and now when you went through those painful periods, you're watching this come back, and I feel like, Steven, probably for you, there's an excitement, right? Because they're actually good for the first time since you've really been watching it. And then for a lot of us who've watched, you know, the glory days when, you know, the heydays of United, and then to come to this, is there's some speculation, right? There's some skepticism. Like, okay, like, this is good, but it's not quite at that dominant level that they were at when we were used to watching them growing up. Like, I caught the tail end of United's dominance when I started really getting into soccer and watching the Premier League. So I have a small taste of kind of when they were winning the last, you know, 4 or 5 years when Sir Alex Ferguson was there. So there's like that little taste in the beginning of, oh, okay, they're a winning team, and now they're getting back to that. But it's, yeah, it's crazy to think that, you know, there's so many people who come in, they're not used to it. They're just used to United losing and switching through managers and really not having a taste of success. So you look at last year, and I know a lot of people were disappointed with the Europa League final loss and the, you know, the semifinal loss in the FA Cup as well. And they're not used to that winning, so it feels like progress. And for some of us, it's like, oh, we're just waiting to get back to that point where they were so dominant, right?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you know, like the overall reaction to the Mourinho era is for fans who have been fans longer than me is so negative, you know, and I don't know how much of that is his two times at Chelsea and, you know, also just the part where he's an incredibly easy person to root against. But like, I always just enjoyed how just arrogant and disrespectful he was just to the general stuff. Like, my favorite thing is they're being like, yeah, so Man United hasn't been very good. He's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. We just won Europa League, which we've never won. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm adding prestige to the club. And it's just like, dude, they won a European treble. Like, this is not a thing that you should be excited about. But I think, you know, as a fan who had only known them for being bad, having a manager with that, like, swagger was very different. You know, Louis van Gaal wasn't like that. David Moyes certainly wasn't like that. David Moyes was just a walking meme. So I don't know. It's funny.
Yeah, I would say one thing I appreciate about you know, supporters like you, Stephen, who knew what to United is that perspective, right? Because you have a ton of older United fans or fans who have, you know, followed United for longer, having this sense of entitlement that can be really toxic sometimes, especially in the cesspool of Twitter and,
yeah,
comment sections. But yeah, when your introduction was, okay, this team is not that good, then progress, then I think sometimes you have more appreciation for it, you know, whereas some fans who've been around longer, who can't let go of the glory days or can't accept that, hey, football is cyclical and, you know, it's not normal that a club can turn things around over the course of one summer. From being nowhere near title to title winners. And, you know, it's like you said, like, you know, you can get more excited about winning the Europa League. You know, you can get more excited about, you know, seeing progress, seeing the style of play improve. What I will say, though, is that I did not enjoy Jose Mourinho at all. It has nothing to do with him being at Chelsea. I don't, like, isn't it in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, Chelsea was a bogey team for United even before the takeover. For some reason, we could never get a good result at Stamford Bridge. So they were annoying. But even when they became good, I never really considered Chelsea a rival in the way that Liverpool and City were. Even when City was shit and Liverpool was shit, they were still bigger rivals than Chelsea. So I don't really care about Mourinho being at Chelsea. But Mourinho's football made me... like, I would wake up... And at one point when Mourinho was at United, I was living on the west coast of the US. So when we had a noon kickoff, I'd be up at 4 a.m. local time and just angry. You know what it is to be angry? At like 4 a.m., like the sun is not coming up for another 2 hours, and I'm just furious already.
Your day's ruined at that point, so.
Oh, my day is ruined. And the sun, like, I'm just waiting for other people to get up. After sit, I'm going to wait another 2 hours for other people to get up so I could make them as miserable as I already am. And I'm tired. You know, just everything about his style of play and when Mourinho is on, he's hilarious. Like, I love him as a personality when he's as far away from my club as possible. Yeah. You know, when he's poisoning the relationship between the team and the fans and the players and himself and the management and himself and the fans, it's hysterical. When he's doing it at your club, you want to die. You know, you want to walk into the ocean and never come back. He is a football dementor. I can't say it in strong enough terms how much I did not enjoy anything about... I mean, maybe that first year there were some bright spots because, you know, Pogba came in, Ibrahimovic came in, and you thought, okay, this is a guy who is... He has a big enough personality for the club. Maybe he had learned his lesson from his hubris at Madrid, and he got sort of humbled there because Madrid, as a club fan base, media sort of chased him out of there. Like, he was not popular. And you could tell he didn't enjoy that second spell at Chelsea. But, you know, when he said, oh, I'm the happy one now, okay. He's now said that three or four times in a row. We know he's lying. Like, he's just not happy in football. He's just miserable. I thought, all right, maybe this is going to be different. Wrong again. You know, by the second season, he was already complaining and sniping and you know, choosing, as he does at every club, you know, chooses players to have a weird vendetta against to freeze out and ostracize and alienate. So, yeah, so, no, did not enjoy Mourinho.
Yeah, my buddy, who, like I said, he was the one who's a United fan, and, you know, he has all the memories of Beckham and Giggs and the Neville brothers and Scholes and all those guys. And the differences in the way that we went through that Mourinho era is so funny, because he goes, it was, because I remember him telling me, he's like, I know you don't get this yet, but I need you to understand this. The two things that United have historically been known for is for bringing in young players and for playing aggressive attacking football. He goes, I don't think you understand that we're bringing in a defensive first guy who prefers 35-year-olds. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that doesn't sound great. And then he got there and it was kind of Ibrahimovic and, you know, Pogba coming back and all that kind of stuff. And it was funny. And then I remember watching him turn on the players, because at first it was, these players are great. They're going to do what I'm going to ask them to do. We're doing what we can. You know, I can't ask more of these guys. You know, that's when we get like the Ander Herrera turns into a super defender for a game and locks up Hazard and all that kind of, and it's just all that great stuff. And then he just goes, these players aren't good enough. I don't know what anybody wants from me. I've talked to the club. The club won't give me new players. And it's like, oh, it just flipped right away. And now that's where we're at. And oh, just watching that end like that was just, I remember waking up to the news that he had been fired and being like, yeah, it was time. Just, that wasn't good.
I retweet that announcement every year on the anniversary. I celebrate it. Like, oh, it's Mourinho getting sacked today, you know? Share it again. It's just a little jolt of adrenaline knowing that we fired Mourinho. Yeah, he was just, I mean, in terms of style, we've seen him be adaptable before, you know, his Madrid team, they were a counter-attacking team, but they were exciting. I mean, that was clearly, that's one of the you know, most exciting teams, I think, most devastating teams La Liga has ever seen, you know, that Ozil-Ronaldo team. But yeah, I mean, Mourinho is Mourinho, I think. And I think at this point, expecting him to change or be chastened by any experiences is foolish, as I learned myself. And I think, actually, Mourinho also makes me appreciate the Van Gaal era even less, because Van Gaal forced us into the arms of Mourinho. Because Van Gaal's football was boring on purpose, right? It was boring by design. And if his football wasn't that dreary, like if we weren't desperate to feel something, to feel anything, we wouldn't have turned to Mourinho. But we were so, it was like, oh, just anything must be better than this void, this black hole of feeling of just aimless possession, of only one player at a time being allowed to dribble, of, I mean, Van Gaal, and, you know, of course, the Van Gaal team still, you know, contain a lot of senior pros who had their relationships in the media. So there was no shortage of leaks as to what went wrong under Van Gaal. So it's well established now that forwards were told that they always had to take an extra touch before shooting, and that players were only supposed to play these very rigid roles. So yeah, I think the players enjoyed it as much as we did, which is to say not at all. And then it's out of that desperation that we turn to Mourinho. And then we only turn to Van Gaal because the job was too big for David Moyes. It's like, oh, let's get somebody more proven, a big personality, which Van Gaal was. Van Gaal is off the pitch. I love Louis Van Gaal. He is one of the funniest people to have ever worked in football.
I think the pratfall on the sideline is still the best.
Oh my god, in the world. That is impeccable physical comedy, you know. Or him in that press conference with Mata, where he says he uses the word horny with his players. He wants his players to be horny. When Myron Fellaini got his hair pulled in the game, and he said, "This is not allowed," the pulling of the hair, and then he pauses and he goes, "Only in sex masochism is it allowed." And he says it with a complete deadpan. You can't. I mean, there's nobody. I'm sorry. There is nobody working in football. Mourinho is funny, but he's not that funny. There's nobody that can give that kind of comic timing. But it's just on the pitch. It was so bad. And the larger point in that is that you have to get your appointments right, and there has to be an overarching value system or strategy for when a football club appoints a manager. And we went 3 appointments in a row with them all being reactionary. And to be fair, Solskjaer was also a reactionary appointment because we needed good vibes. We had the ultimate bad vibes manager, and we needed a good vibes manager. But he turned out to be good for more than just vibes. He turned out to be a fairly good manager. But you can make the case that after Sir Alex handpicked David Moyes, every appointment since that has been a reaction to the previous appointment, and not necessarily, okay, is this person the best fit for the personnel that we have, for the vision we have, for how we want the club, the team to play? But, you know, hopefully this time this is our broken clock being right.
Just felt like they, you know, you go from so many years with Sir Alex Ferguson, then obviously he picks his guy in David Moyes. And after that, it's like, okay, we're going to go and get the biggest name available, and then Louis van Gaal comes in, and then he goes, and then okay, well, Mourinho's available, we're gonna go get him. And then with Solskjaer, it feels like you said, it's like a good vibes type signing to bring him in, almost similar to what they did with David Moyes, but a under the radar signing for a manager, a guy who wasn't really proven. He got it done with Molde, and then, you know, but no real track record like Mourinho and Van Gaal had. And then you kind of push away from that and get back to what was successful for them in the past. And I'm not 100% sold on Solskjaer yet. I think obviously what he's done has been way better than the Mourinho era and the Van Gaal era. But it is kind of a reversion back to what had made them successful so far. And it never hurts to bring in a guy who knows what the club is about, right? And has been around the glory days for United. He knows what this club is about. And Steven, you mentioned this earlier about bringing in young players and signing, not 35-year-olds, like, right, that's instilled with him. We've seen that, right, bringing in guys like Pellistri and Diallo, and obviously promoting, you know, Greenwood and the other guys that he's promoted so far, right? So you kind of see that the reason they went back to a guy like Solskjaer. Now, hopefully it pans out. I think fans are split right now on whether he's the guy to kind of move things forward or not, but, he's got finally the backing, I think, from the club with the signings this summer to really go out and do it. And now we just got to wait till everybody gets back and is 100% healthy.
So that kind of gets to something I think is really interesting about soccer, which is, you know, specifically, like, especially European football, like the way that transfers work, the way that it's financial fair play. There's not really an established cap. I'm sorry. But, you know, I think one of the things that, again, just because of the time that I have come in and what I've watched, is you watch this club go from being an institution built on the back of an institution in Sir Alex Ferguson. Like, I think him and United, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like him and United are to a degree inseparable, but they are also both separate identities. And, you know, he was the coach and he was a manager, and then he's finding all these young players and stuff. And then when he leaves, they bring in David Moyes, who he handpicks. And we also get Woodward stepping way outside of his zone of expertise. And now he's in charge of the football side of it and not just the money side of it. And, you know, this, you kind of see, like, as we've been talking about, like over the last 10 years, the way the club has just been trying to find itself again after having moved on from Ferguson. And I wonder, Brent, do you think not having addressed that before Ferguson left hurt the club? Or do you think once he left, it was always going to be an issue?
I think to a degree it was always going to be an issue, right? You in terms of the shoes that the actual managing of the football team, filling those shoes. But definitely a lot of it has to do with a failure of planning. And we see some of that with Arsenal as well, right? Because Arsene Wenger was not as good or successful as Sir Alex Ferguson, but he is the closest thing to Sir Alex Ferguson in the Premier League era in England. In terms of the longevity and in terms of the total control that, that those two managers had over their club. Not just total control, but having a hand in every aspect. You know, the idea of Sir Alex working under a director of football would have been seen as being ludicrous, right? He is the director of football. And he knew how to delegate to his coaches in the same way that, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does, because Solskjaer famously doesn't do a lot of coaching on the training ground. You know, he steps in when needed, but, you know, the coaches handle, like, most of the sessions. Sir Alex was like that as well. But he would have a hand in everything, you know, in recruitment, in negotiation of contracts, you know, all kinds of stuff, and scouting and everything. And I think not recognizing that that couldn't be replicated and not modernizing the structure was a failure on the organizational level. And David Gill has maybe his reputation has grown because of you know, how Woodward is seen as being incompetent at his job. But him leaving at the same time as Alex was also a huge problem, that that transition needed to be handled better as well. Because you can't have a new chairman, essentially, even though Woodward's title is executive vice chairman, whatever it is. But you can't have a new person in charge and a new manager when the figures they're replacing are, well, one, this manager who's this larger than life, kind of supreme, almost mythical figure at this point in time, and another person who has been well established in his job, and is, for better or for worse, is seen, like, at least has that authority. Whether or not he was actually good or not, you know, you can leave that debate for another time. I'm talking about David Gill here. So I think not foreseeing that a plan for that better was a failure, and also on the recruitment side, because let's face it, that team that won in 2013 was not a team that was going to win again without significant investment, right? That team is a title winner under Sir Alex Ferguson. It's not a title winner under anybody else.
Right.
That was Robin van Persie had one of the greatest individual campaigns ever. And the rest of that team was held together by, you know, hopes and dreams and adrenaline and duct tape. There were a lot of aging, you know, Michael Carrick was, I don't know, 64, 65 years old at that point in time. You know, Rio and Vidic were on their last legs. Evra was close to being on his last. I mean, team needed a refresh and significant investment. The structure of the club was not prepared to act decisively in the window. David Moyes famously, Thiago was there on a plate, and he felt like he didn't see enough of Thiago to sign him.
Oh no!
No, I joke a lot about Thiago now, and the player he is now. But when he was leaving Barcelona for Bayern, you know, that was an alley-oop.
I didn't know that. That's crazy. Yeah.
And there were other players as well, apparently, allegedly, reportedly, that we could have signed. And then we end up letting Marouane Fellaini's the clause in his contract expire for when we could have had him for a certain fee, and then buy him anyway for more than that on deadline day. So
yeah, I came in as the hero, or was it him or Mata who came in on the chopper?
Mata came in on the chopper in January. Lovely man, you know, great player, but also didn't have an obvious fit in the team, and no manager that's had him has known how to use him until he was, you know, past his prime, which is where he is now.
Yeah.
So a shame, but I love Juan Mata. But what was David Moyes going to do with Juan Mata? Nothing. which is what he did. So yeah, it was poor planning all around, I would say.
So kind of at the end of this transition, you know, you can look at the team United have right now, and there are players to be excited about. You know, Bruno and Pogba obviously have started off this year looking just great, looking phenomenal, and playing off of each other in a way that I think highlights how screwed Pogba was when he first got here. Because it's always, you know, one of those things where he was at Juventus and you saw him and you're like, oh yeah, dude, this dude's incredible. And then, you know, since then we've seen him play for France and you're like, yeah, this dude is incredible. And then you're wondering, it's like, oh yeah, well, one of those teams had Pellini. Oh my God, why can't I think of his name? The old guy with the beard.
Italian. Pirlo?
Pirlo, there we go. And, you know, and Vidal and those kinds of players. And then he's got Conte and those players at France. And he's just always kind of been on a talent island by himself for his time at United. And, you know, now you've got Rashford and Martial and Greenwood. You know, Varane comes in, Maguire comes in. So I guess how far away from legitimate contention, we'll say just in the Premier League, do you think this team is?
I think right now, without any further signings, United can't compete for the league title. And not just any signings, I mean specifically United need to address midfield. We have been kind of holding midfield by committee for years now. And just kind of sticking whoever in there, and it's not going to work. I think signing Sancho fills an obvious hole in not just in the squad, but in the first 11, right? Because we lacked playmakers outside of Bruno in the final third. Now you have a playmaker from wide, somebody who can finish, an incredibly productive player for only 21. Varane is an upgrade on Lindelof, even though Lindelof isn't as good as Harry Maguire, but he also is not a bad player. He's a decent player.
Mm-hmm.
But Varane is an upgrade. You know, he's a similar style player, and he has more experience and also has some strengths that Lindelof doesn't. So we upgrade a position that we desperately need on the right wing. We upgrade a position that maybe wasn't desperately needed, but could have used an upgrade. It's the bit in between that's the problem, right? Because the reason the center backs get exposed and the reason that forwards get stopped and forwards some accolades and stuff. Same. No, it is that position in the middle. And I think we address that properly. Then that's probably one obvious thing. We'll need a lot of luck because Chelsea are very good, City are very good. Liverpool, if they don't pass the streak, will be very good again. But in a perfect season where things break our way, where we get lucky with injuries as well, if we can address midfield properly, we can probably compete.
If they, what is your ideal signing? I don't know if you don't necessarily.
You're on mute, bud.
Oh, sorry about that. As I said, what is your ideal signing then for midfield? Because I know there's been a ton of names mentioned, and you don't necessarily have to name any specific guys off, but the way we've seen Pogba start this year, he's playing on the left. He's got a little bit more freedom to kind of move offensively and just almost free roam across the, you know, the final third of the pitch. But when Rashford comes back, and what we saw when, I think when Sancho came on today, Pogba went back and played a pivot with Fred and then eventually McTominay when he came on. You know, Steven, you talked about where is Pogba's best position. And when he played with Juventus, he was playing a bit further forward. And when he plays with France, he's got Conte as kind of a cover back there. I don't know who comes in and allows Pogba still to be able to do that, unless it is, you know, an Ndidi or a guy who is strictly going to be that defensive midfield. That's his job. He's in there. I don't necessarily think you can bring somebody in as a pivot to play with Pogba, and he still is as effective as he has been to start this year. He just doesn't have that freedom. So if you had a guy who could come in, or even if it's changing a formation up a bit, like who's a guy or what's the type of player you bring in to still get the best out of Pogba but improve the midfield for United?
Yeah, I mean, it is, in terms of one signing, it's a tricky one, right? Because it maybe it's like you said, it you want somebody who's athletic enough to cover for Pogba if he gets moved deeper when Rashford comes back into the team. And I'm only thinking that this team, with or without Marcus Rashford, even when he's not on form, is a different team. Because in this current squad, he offers a unique counter-attacking threat. He's so direct, and he's productive, right? He makes shit happen. And in fact, a lot of last season when Pogba was injured was wait for either Bruno or Rashford to make something happen. Now, with Sancho, with Pogba fit, with Cavani, there's now more options in attack. But the biggest problem with midfield is that the best balanced midfield we have is the midfield that causes us the most grief, right? It's McTominay and Fred. It's like, I hate seeing two of them together. Even though I like them individually as players, they're so limited because McTominay is not going to be a defensive midfielder, right? He's 24 now or something. He's a box-to-box midfielder.
He's kind of Fellaini, right?
Sorry?
He's kind of like a Fellaini, right?
I would say he offers more as a box-to-box than Fellaini did. Because so much of Fellaini's game was predicated on him being that aerial threat.
Yeah.
And he was almost better if you push him further forward and use him for knockdowns or to hold the ball up and get runners involved. Whereas McTominay has a little bit more to his game. But the more does not include being able to screen in front of the back four and pass, because he's not a good passer. What I love about McTominay is that he never hides. Right, he does not shrink, you know. He calls for the ball. He tries things, whether they come off or not, different story. But he's limited. I like having him in the squad. He shouldn't be in our strongest 11, I would say, unless we have a holding midfielder who can also pass. And I don't know who that is. That will allow us to play Pogba in that. Closer to his role where he was most successful at Juventus, you know, where he's kind of wide-ish on the left. But if Pogba's then dropping in a little bit deeper and we need someone who is really mobile and is able to, you know, win possession, recycle it quickly, and, you know, allow Pogba the freedom to still get forward where he's more effective. I don't know. I mean, you know, there is Ndidi, of course, who is, you know, proven in the league and wouldn't take any time to adapt. And he's definitely more of a ball winner than a distributor from deep. Apparently, Solskjaer's primary target is Rice. There's always a board, you know, when clubs are recruiting, here's the first choice for this position we want to fill. Second choice, third choice, etc. Apparently, for the central midfield or defensive midfielder, however, Solskjaer sees that position that he wants to fill or upgrade, Rice is the number one choice. I don't know how I feel about that, because Rice is good. I've come around on Declan Rice as being a good player. I wasn't impressed with his lack of passing range when I saw him play for England at the Euros, playing next to someone who does that screening, be everywhere rule, you know, because that's what Calvin Phillips does for Leeds, right? Leeds play this 4-1-4-1 formation where he is the screener in midfield, right? He has to be everywhere. Phillips would be decent, but I think he's limited also. And Rice, the biggest problem with Rice is that he's going to cost a lot, right? He's the next captain of West Ham. He's now in England, not just an England international, he's an England starter, a regular England starter. And West Ham don't really need the money that much. And of course, you know, there's so much money in the Premier League now where you can't just go picking off the best players from below the top four, like the good old days. Now clubs have income and they're run responsibly. So, you know, that might be £100 million proposition. But hey, if it was £60 or £70 million, and if that's who the manager wants, then that'd probably be my first choice. I think I'm okay with that. There are a ton of other options in Liga and in, you know, around Europe and outside of Europe as well, but I highly doubt that that's where United are looking. I don't know if there's a perfect player for that role who's actually attainable, but I think the first choice is Declan Rice.
Before we move on from the current squad, there's just one guy I wanted to talk about. Obviously, Pogba and Bruno have kind of stolen the headlines for the first two games of the season, but Mason Greenwood was on the score sheet again today. He's got two for two in the first two games of the season, 8 in his last 10, dating back to, I think, April of last year. So just kind of come onto a tear lately. I think there was a report, I'm not sure who it was by, a couple days ago, but the United are looking at an established striker for next season after Cavani likely leaves on a free. If Greenwood can keep this up for the rest of the year, now, obviously not a, you know, a goal every game, but you know, finish the season at around 15, 20 goals. What are your thoughts on leaving him there as kind of the number one option going into next season, or do you think United needs to go out and get, you know, an Erling Haaland, or I know Mbappe was linked, but I think he's off to Madrid, but somebody like that, like an elite top five, top 10 striker in world football?
Yeah, I think that's almost definitely the priority for next summer, an elite number nine. Mason Greenwood is the real deal. You know, he is it. He is an incredible finisher. But Solskjaer said something really interesting after the game against Leeds. So Carl Anker from The Athletic had asked him something about Mason Greenwood being a number nine. And he said, who says I see him as a number nine? He says the only fixed number nine in my eyes we have at the club is Edinson Cavani. And I thought that was really interesting because we've all just assumed, because that's, you know, where Greenwood played, coming through the academy, through reserves, as you know, the focal point up top, but that's where definitely he would eventually end up in the senior team. But he learned that wide right attacking role really well. He's now much better at it on both sides of the ball. His linker play is much better. He's not the creator that Sancho is, but he doesn't track back as much as, let's say, Dan James, but he's much better than he was before. And he's now also better as a number nine. But he can play in various positions, you know, through the front three, let's say. And today he spent a half out wide and he spent a half up top. And I think it might be a year or two before he has a fixed position. And I think having that fluidity in the front three, because Solskjaer has also referenced quite often the 2008-2009 United team, where you had Tevez, Ronaldo, Rooney, none of which played really a fixed position within the attack. And I think that is his vision for this United team now. You know, having players who can interchange while also having, you know, within, if you have four or five attackers competing for three spots, then you have one player in that rotation who is a fixed number nine. Right now, that one player is Cavani, and I think the idea is to upgrade that fixed number nine to, well, probably Haaland. I think that that is obviously the United's first choice for that position. Solskjaer worked with him at Molde. He is the best number nine who will be realistically available, because there is a buyout clause reportedly in his contract. You know, players of his ability don't stay at Dortmund, especially players with his agent don't stay at Dortmund or clubs like Dortmund or clubs like anywhere for very long. So yeah, it could be a perfect storm of circumstances, right? Other super clubs being broke, Madrid being focused on Mbappe, you know, PSG having blown their load on, you know, Messi and new contract with Neymar that they signed recently, Chelsea getting Lukaku, City being focused on Kane. So there could be a path there for United. But yeah, I still think that is necessary, because again, I don't think there is these fixed holes that players fit into. Because Sancho at Dortmund played as much on the left as he did on the right. So there's nothing set in stone that, okay, this is our right side attacker. Pogba might now be splitting his time between the left of the attack and midfield. Rashford, according to what metrics he uses, is, you know, just as productive on the right as he is on the left. And I think if Mason Greenwood, assuming Cavani leaves, he goes back to South America to be closer to family after this season. As much as I love Anthony Martial, I think he is not the answer at number nine. And he's just not going to be at the required level as a fixed number nine. And Mason Greenwood, as of right now, is not a fixed number nine. You know, he's more fluid. So, yeah, I think filling that role is going to be, as good as Greenwood is, filling that role is going to be important, because we need depth also, right? We're always one injury away from being a shit show and looking like it's a bunch of players who've never even met. So, yeah, having that and having quality in depth is really important, because you look at how many games, not too long ago it was, Ighalo playing up front for a number of games. Dan James got, you know, several minutes last year. So you can see when you upgrade the top end, then the players who get pushed down in the ranking, you know, are then better. So you upgrade then the reserves or the fringe players. So and that's what quality teams, that's what the top teams have. You know, you have to have backup players who really push your starters. Like, it should be, you want to win things, your fans should be arguing about who should be starting.
Yeah.
It's like we've kind of talked, this is something I've been thinking about a little bit just kind of while we've been talking, and like, there's a very funny thing where, you know, it feels like for most of the last few years, United have needed a striker, and specifically a number nine, and like, Martial was brought in and he was played wide, then he's been kind of moved to the center. You know, Rashford comes up and he plays in the center, but then he kind of moves out wide. And, you know, so you've got these two guys who were supposed to be nine strikers, center forward kind of players, and they kind of both fluctuated out wide at different times. Same thing is happening with Mason Greenwood. You know, they brought in Lukaku, they brought in Ibrahimovic. They've tried different things. And, you know, it seems to be working to an extent of that they're starting to get certain answers. Sancho coming in is going to be huge, getting a proper nine, like Alon, like you said. But I guess, like, is it a problem that, like, let me say it this way, because this is really all I care about. Is Anthony Martial long for United, or does it seem like he's going to be out the door within the next 2 years?
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think he'll be out the door. And that's just because, you know, somebody's going to have to make room for a player like Allen or whoever is the senior. Because I think I think the number nine that comes in next summer is not going to be a player that comes in for depth, right? Because the number nine for depth right now is Mason Greenwood. Because he's only, you know, he's still a teenager, and he's still learning the position, and he's still growing, like quite literally, still growing. So I think he is next up. So the player that's going to come in is probably going to somebody who's going to share the duties of that position with him, or somebody he is going to eventually move out of the way. But that leaves little room for Martial, because you could make the case right now that Martial is the holder of the number nine shirt, but he's the third best number nine at the club, right? There's Cavani, and Greenwood in that position may have surpassed him. And I say this as somebody who, after lockdown, you know, in Project Restart, Martial looked like the complete modern number nine. You know, his holder play had really improved. He'd gotten stronger. He was involving other players. His link-up play was good. His finishing was good. And I thought, okay, it's clicked. And then he had a decent start to last season, even though the goals weren't coming. And then apparently the goals not coming sort of sapped his confidence. And then he had just a poor to the season. Then he had that injury. And now, he didn't look great today. No. And he's working his way back from injury, but Cavani might be back in contention next weekend. Then you have the international break for Cavani to build up his fitness more. So that might be it. We might not see Anthony Martial start important games for a while. And if the idea is to upgrade the number nine position, then we're talking about upgrading Martial. And United clearly are in a position where, you know, it's not unlimited budgets that we're talking about. You know, there's money made available for top signings, but then beyond that, we also have to raise funds, right? The reason that Kieran Trippier or some other right back to compete with Wan-Bissaka isn't signed yet is because we haven't been able to sell Jesse Lingard or Andreas Pereira, who, you know, went on loan, or anybody else on the fringes of the squad who may be, you know, available for transfer. And I think next season, if we're talking about spending big on a midfielder between this summer or next, and also spending big on a number nine, something is going to have to give, both in terms of funds and in terms of squad space. It'll probably be Martial.
Yeah, I think of the guys available and who could get moved out and still command a decent fee, I think Martial's kind of at the top of that list. He's only 25 and a lot of promise when he came in, and it's not like he's been terrible. He's shown, like you said, glimpses of being what people thought he would get to. But now, even without Haaland coming in, actually, even like you said, with Cavani and Greenwood now, he's now the third choice number nine. And with Greenwood out wide, he's almost the fourth choice winger, with Rashford and Sancho in there. And then I would put Greenwood, if he's on the bench, as a winger above Martial at this point. And he's not a guy that I think will be comfortable, for sure, being the fourth choice winger and the third choice number nine. And I don't think it's a player United want to have on the bench as that fourth choice, when you could have a Dan James or Amad Diallo if he stays or goes on loan this year and wants to get into the first 11, or at least into the bench for next year. It's an easy choice, like, if you are trying to fund for other positions for a guy to dangle out there, because there's going to be teams who would be interested in him. And it might not be, you know, the Chelseas and Cities and Liverpools of the world, but teams like Arsenal or teams that are, you know, Leicester City or other teams that are kind of have some money and looking to bolster their starting 11, he's a guy that will still attract that interest. But I can't see him or United being happy with him being, you know, fourth choice or third choice in any position on the bench.
Yeah, first of all, now that we've all agreed he needs to go, I should send him to Atletico, where he can be with the werewolf and the scariest man in professional football. But I also think, like you guys were talking about, like, the thing I think that makes it him the most obvious choice is how much youth and potential they have in their younger players that are going to play out wide. You've got Chong, you've got Mejbri, you've got Diallo, you know, Sancho's only 20, 21, something like that. Like, they have so much wide attacking talent that the area they clearly are the most lacking is through the center. So I guess it just makes the most sense to move him out and see what happens. But it's going to be a bummer for me when he leaves, because he's kind of been my favorite player while he's been here. So.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm still, my Martial stock is, I haven't completely sold it yet. I still like it. And I hope he has a good season. But at the end of the day, he hasn't progressed, right? He hasn't developed in a way that's commensurate with his level of talent. He showed, like I said, during Project Restart, I thought, oh, that's Martial as a center forward. That's the fusion we always wanted to see. But other than that stretch, is he a different player to when he came as a teenager?
Yeah, he doesn't have any hair.
Well, that, yeah, besides being old. Is he any better? Has he added aspects to his game that he didn't have before? I don't know. You know, he runs down a lot of blind alleys, which is great if you want to win penalties for Bruno to put in the corner. But if he's not getting them, then you realize, shit, this guy's just run down blind alleys. When he's winning free kicks and penalties, you're like, this is great. This is why you have good dribblers who have quick feet and defenders have to foul them. But if he's just losing possession, you're like, well, has this guy not learned anything in the last, 6 years of training? Well, like I said, I hope he has a good year, but you made a good point about there's young talent knocking on the door. Like, I think Ahmad is also the real deal. I mean, he just has a beautiful balance that the football kind of footballers I like have. You know, he always looks like he has a second longer than the players around him. You know, he just buys himself that extra second. You know, he's really balanced on his feet. He's a surprisingly good passer. In addition to his dribbling skills and all that, he moves really well off the ball. So I think he will be, even if he goes on loan this season, he is going to be competing for a place, at least in the first team squad next season. And Hannibal is really good. Hannibal is going to be competing for a attacking midfield place. And your point about, or Eddie's point about Martial being a fourth choice winger, it's probably true. You know, you look at the left of the attack, there's Rashford, there is Sancho, there is Pogba. Now, for probably most big games. And then you look on the right, there is Sancho, there is Greenwood, and there is Rashford. So Martial, And Martial has never been good on the right. He's been effective on the left. So at best right now, he's probably fourth choice on either wing. And he might be at different points, first or second choice right now through the middle, depending on who's playing. But he's arguably the third best. And he's not a bad player. He's a good player, obviously very talented. But yeah, at some point, the numbers just won't work. And I think he will probably be the one to make way.
The one thing I think Edinson Cavani is proved about this attacking setup that United have is they're desperate for a selfish player up front, and not in a bad way, but a guy who just wants to go out there and score goals. And, you know, Rashford can do that, but he's a creator. Sancho can score goals, but he's a creator. You know, Bruno is probably our best goal scorer right now as a midfielder, and you know, plays his best as almost a second striker at times. And even Pogba's, you know, he's a good goal scorer as well, but he's mostly a creator, as we've seen to start this year. And Edinson Cavani fits so well in this team because he's got all those creators around him, and the only thing he knows he's out there to do is score goals. And I think that's where guys like Anthony Martial is kind of struggled a bit. Is, yeah, he wants to score goals, but I don't see him as that guy where he's out there to do one thing. I think he's almost similar to Sancho and Rashford in the sense that he is a creator, and he is a guy who's going to make runs, and he's going to do a lot more than just try and score. And that's why, like, you know, the prospects of bringing in a player like Erling Haaland to this team, you know, a guy who right now is probably the, you know, I don't even think probably is the best young striker in the world, just his size and his speed, and you throw in the creative talents that United already have, and obviously the connection that he had with Jadon Sancho at Dortmund. You know, it's hard for this attack to get that much better, but to add a player like that into the mix is unreal. Because, you know, I love Edinson Cavani, but I think he's in the perfect situation where he is the only guy that can do that for this team, that it just works so well for him. And why I think he struggled at PSG is they didn't really need a guy like that. They had players like that. And then he comes into a situation here where he's that guy. And he's the only guy at this club that can do that. And to bring in another player like that, and especially a younger one who's going to be around this young core for a while, is outside of a defensive midfielder, is exactly what this team needs.
All right, I'm depressed having talked about Anthony Martial losing. I love that. His hair is scary. I don't know why he shaved it, but I guess he wants to just be like his hero, Thierry Henry, which is fine. It's all right. We'll always have the ICC, the give-and-go goal. That was perfect. So to do something minimally hockey, so I don't know where it came from, but I was talking to a friend of mine about how it's become my favorite word in Twitter sports analysis is unserious. You and Tosin, Nigerian Scams on Twitter, use it, and it is my favorite thing in the world because it's so biting, and yet it's not mean. It's incredibly critical, but it's not mean-spirited. And I just kind of enjoy that. So we put together a couple of different jerseys to show you, and we're going to have you decide if they are serious or unserious. And just so everybody knows, this whole thing kind of started because Brandt on Twitter said that he found he really liked the new Seattle Kraken jerseys, and, you know, he decided, I don't know anything about hockey, but we're going to go for it. So we figured, in honor of his entry point to hockey being jerseys, we would go with this, because hockey has had some very interesting jerseys. So, let's see here. You ready?
Yep, I got them up.
You got the first one up? All right. Can you see everything, Brent?
Yeah, I can.
All right, cool. So, all right, we'll just do this one. The Arizona Kachina jersey.
Well, first of all, shout out to Scams. I believe the originator of Unserious, and you're right. What a perfect, it's such a perfect term, right? Because it implies something specific. Oh no, this is a serious jersey. Which team is this?
This is the Arizona Coyotes.
Oh, this is tough. Yeah.
This is their Kachina jersey.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this one's a big
I think this is widely considered one of the best jerseys. They went away from this for a while. So this picture we have up here is from way back, early days for Arizona. They moved away from this to some just blank slate maroon jerseys for a long time, and they just finally got back to these after a while. But these are widely considered some of the top jerseys in hockey history for sure.
And they are called jerseys, right? Because there was some, I wasn't totally clear about whether they're called kits or jerseys, or somebody told me they're called jumpers.
No, sweaters. Yeah, you'll get into the debate. It's either jersey or sweater for sure, depending on who you talk to.
Okay. If you're talking to people from Canada, they're going to say sweater because they think they're better than us. We have to yell at Eddie about that all the time.
I call it a jersey, but I know a ton of people who call it sweaters. So. Hater.
Damn Canadians.
All right, what do we got next here?
Let's see. So, okay, this is the St. Louis Blues jersey, and this is just the weird one that's half blue, half red.
Highly unserious.
It's a lot going on in this one.
Yeah, and none of it is good.
You know, like the thing is, like you look at United's jerseys today. Like I think a lot of people love the kit, like the actual kit itself, but then the shorts kind of throw it off a bit. I feel like this one is like the jersey on its own might not be that bad, but you throw in the socks, like straight half red there too, and the blue shorts with the gloves, it kind of throws the whole kit is just thrown off.
Oh, this is, I take extra pleasure in this because I have a good friend from St. Louis and he's a Blues fan. So I'm going to make sure and tell him that their jersey is garbage.
Bringing people together. I like it. So I don't know if you can quite see, but like on the sleeves right there is like lightning crackles, and it is just this part of the jersey. It is the strangest thing in the world. It is like just on the forearm, and it looks like weird, like lightning or tiger stripes.
Very unserious. Is that a clue?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What is, what's with the, is this the actual logo? MS Paint.
Yeah.
it's two different fonts on here.
Yeah.
That was their logo for a long time. Even the new one is basically this, but not 3D.
Oof. Yeah. Unserious.
This was the phase for the NHL where they started adding the things like the waves and lightning to the jerseys to try and be so exciting.
It's so 90s. I love it.
All right. Moving on. Oh, there we go.
Oh, here we go. So this is Gretzky in the classic LA Kings white chevron jersey.
Oh, this is clean. This is serious. This is serious jersey.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite jerseys of all time, which I already am in a shit with our fucking listeners already about saying the Red Wings logo is good, so I'll deal with it. But this is probably one of my favorite jerseys of all time.
Yeah, and is that Casey Affleck in the background? I assume so. I didn't.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, I think they play on Manchester Street in El Segundo, so.
Yeah, there you go.
That's where they practice. That makes sense. Let's see. Oh, here you go. So where do you live, Brett?
I live in New York now.
Okay, that's what I thought. So I wanted to get these in front of you. This is the Lady Liberty New York jerseys.
I have not been to a Rangers game.
You haven't been missing much. You're fine.
Unserious. This is strong 4th of July themed vibes. Don't like it.
It's a little too jingoistic for your taste?
A little too much rah 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 back to back World War Champs energy. Don't like it. Unserious.
It's like the one time, like the Rangers are one of those teams. There's a few teams that like rarely change their jerseys, and this is like one of, I think, two or three times they changed it and it missed completely. Like this.
Yeah, if I get on a subway car and everybody on there is wearing these jerseys, I'm getting off.
It might actually happen.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the classic third Mighty Ducks jersey, which so many fans want.
Go Ducks. Up the Ducks. Is that... I don't know.
Yeah, man, you got it.
Come on, you Ducks. No, this is nice. This is serious. I like this. Is that mauve?
Yeah, I think they call it like an eggplant, but...
Eggplant? Wow.
Yeah.
That is sophisticated. I like it.
Yeah, widely considered, I think, a lot of Ducks fans' favorite jersey. And only came for 1 year, which I think is the big
thing. That was a real tragedy of that jersey. Yeah. It was a nice jersey. The Fish Sticks jersey. Let's go. So this is the New York Islanders Fish Sticks jersey. This is probably one of the most infamous jerseys, I think, in hockey history.
Infamous. What is that logo? Is that a...
It's a longshoreman.
A longshoreman holding a hockey stick.
Yeah. So the story behind this one is the Islanders had their kind of traditional logo for a long time, and they felt like it was too similar or just kind of too generic and close to what the Rangers do. So they wanted to differentiate themselves and kind of think what defined being like an Islander was. And they came to the conclusion that it's a fisherman.
It's a longshoreman.
Yeah. Which I don't have the picture here, but I can't. There's a fish sticks company that the guy looks exactly like this. And that's they went in flames. Man. Yeah, they went in flames like that.
Oh, but. This is incredible, because sometimes when I want to look different, I also dress like shit. Which is apparently what they decided to do here.
Oh my goodness.
Unserious.
I maintain that jersey would be perfect if it wasn't for the Colgate stripes at the bottom, which just come up high to the hat, like to your midsection for no reason.
The additional wave and like the pointed stripes on the shoulders too.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, and I'm sorry, a longshoreman holding a hockey stick is in no way intimidating.
Well, that coincides with the fact they weren't good. So
I'm not going to tell Wayne Rooney that that's what you have to tell him. Longshoremen aren't scary.
Yeah, and the wave thing at the bottom sort of makes it look like he's a moo person, or they are a moo person, or maybe it's just this picture. I need to make this bigger, but yeah, not a fan.
Oh my goodness.
Ooh. Oh. Okay. All right. We have a little astrology here.
So this is maybe has the best name of any jersey, but this is the Dallas Stars, what it has become known as, the Mooterish jersey, with the what do you call it? The constellation of a bull's head and a weird star coming around and hitting it in his nose.
Serious.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go. All right. What do you like about this?
I like the color scheme. Is that green?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. Yeah, I like the color scheme. I don't know. I like the bull constellation thing going on. Not huge on that star. But yeah, I think, I like it.
There we go.
I'm torn on this one, you know? Like, I've obviously seen this one multiple times, and I feel like I have a different opinion every time I see it. But, like... The one thing that always gets me with this is they're the Dallas Stars, and they had that too much of that Texas focus with the bullhead, and they obviously the constellations are there for the Stars, but I can't always get out of that. I can't erase seeing Mike Modano in this jersey out of my mind. So
something to do with Texas has too much focus on Texas. Have you met
him before? It's on brand for sure.
So this is the late 90s?
Yeah.
Eddie, Vancouver, the skate jersey.
Unserious.
Oh.
Because I think something about the Canucks sounds like a racial slur to me. I know it's technically not, but it has a racial slur energy. So I don't like it.
So oh my goodness!
Nothing Canuck is gonna. See, I don't even like saying it. I don't like the way
it's an sounds. Unserious word.
Yeah, I don't like it.
This jersey, like, widely debate. Like, there's no middle ground with this jersey. You either love it or you hate it. And like, I can never get over the color scheme, like the yellow and red with the black. Like, I think if you had one, that's fine. But the logo is like an all time bottom tier logo. Like, it is. Oh. We joked about the Lightning logo being like MS Paint. Like, this
dude, is like, this is straight drawing. Out of like a 1980s bowling alley. I love this logo. Yes. I love this jersey. It's funny, it grew on me too, because when I was a kid, I hated these jerseys and that logo. And then it kind of like clicked for me as I got older, and I was like, nah, those are fantastic.
You just see this being like a neon sign in a bar, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's the nostalgia.
Yes.
For you.
Yeah, it always gets me.
It's not good. What is this?
This is the Anaheim Ducks breakout jersey. So that is Tammy Solani wearing a jersey. And on that jersey is the Ducks mascot Wild Wing, actually wearing a Ducks jersey, jumping out of the ice.
Wow. you know, there's so much here. There's so much going on here. A jersey of a mascot wearing a jersey that's taking up the entire front of the jersey, because you can't, the logo for the team is not on the jersey, it's on the jersey that's on the jersey. Whoa. Right, there's no logo. Yeah. There's no bigger logo.
No
wow. I'm gonna vote serious for this. Just for the audacity.
That's right. The breakout jersey is a king.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yes. I feel very validated right now.
It's ridiculous. I would probably feel, if I was a fan of the Ducks, obviously I'm a longtime Kraken fan.
yeah, we wouldn't want you to go against that like history you have with them.
Yeah, I'm a Kraken ultra. If I was a fan of the Ducks, I don't know how I'd feel about these, but as a neutral, I mean, incredible. Incredible guts to go with this option.
They went and brought these back as a retro jersey for this year, and it's the same as the Canucks jersey. Like, you either love them or you hate them, but like this is so Disney owned the team back when these came out. Like, this. They're the only company, I think, that would have the balls to do something like this on a jersey. You know what I mean? Like, this screams, yeah, we're owned by Disney, so we can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
All right, I think this is the last one we got here, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that an oyster?
So,
no. So, it's not an oyster.
It's...
Hold on. I'm going to guess... I'm just going to keep guessing from what I can see in this image. It's not an oyster. Is it oil?
Yep. Yes.
It's the Oilers. That is a team.
That is a team.
Wow. Awful. Truly, truly bad. Unserious.
I feel like if you don't know the team name, if you are seeing, I feel like there's almost no way anybody can guess what this is from that logo. Trying to get an oil drop into a logo is hard enough, and you see it in their current jerseys. Like, I don't know what this is. Like, it's an oil drop surrounded by what I can only believe is a metal oil drop encasing it.
Yeah, this is no. You know, now that I'm a fervent hockey fan and Kraken supporter, this is now my least favorite team.
Hell yeah, let's go. Yeah. That's fantastic.
For the sake of the planet, in the fight against climate change. the Oilers must fail.
Well, that works even better now because the Seattle will be playing at the Climate Change Arena. So.
Oh my God! Yes, perfect.
Just incredible. It's written in the stars.
Oh, it was meant to be. Yeah, I hate the Oilers now specifically because of that logo. That is terrible.
Oh man. Well, Brent, can't tell you how much fun this was. I really appreciate you giving us the time and, you know, talking down with us about, you know, Man United and where that team is at, and then playing that game with us. And if you're down for it, we'd love to have you on like halfway through the season or something and see how your life as a Kraken fan is going.
I would love that. And hopefully people that listen to this didn't stop listening 5 minutes in when they realized that there was nothing about hockey on. And it was not a joke. But yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on. This has been a lot of fun. And yeah, happy to come back and talk more United or more jerseys or maybe even learn something about hockey.
Is there anything you want to plug or...?
No, I don't have anything for sale right now. especially with OnlyFans go clean. Yeah, if you want more bad football opinions and even worse opinions on life, you can follow me at Brent Maximin on Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, again, I just can't tell you how much we appreciate you spending the time with us this afternoon, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.